Geopolitics and Empire is joined by S.L. Canton, who's a geopolitical analyst, columnist, blogger, podcaster, writer based out of Bangalore, India. He's written for China Global Times, Sputnik. You can find him on his Substack and his very popular Twitter X account. The links are in the description. Welcome to Geopolitics and Empire, S.L.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
I've been following your stuff for a long while, and really fascinating analysis that you put out. And before getting your thoughts on different topics, is there anything you can tell us about the work that you're doing, or were you anything about?
Sure. As I was working in the high tech field for a long time. And then around the 2008 financial crisis, I started to get involved. I started to think more about politics and finance and so on. And the more I read into it, it was like a rabbit hole, And the whole vision or the idea of how the world works, it just started to come apart. And then I also had some physical problems, like with my stomach. And I used to travel a lot for my work. And I used to have all sorts of stomach problems, with digestion and the whole stuff. And then I started to do some research, and then I was figuring out all these things about the processed food, what's going into the food, the pesticides, the GMOs, the chemicals. And then I learned about the organic food. And it was so shocking to me. I'm like, well, we have the government with the food pyramid, the FDA, the EPA and all that stuff, and we have all these great scientists from Harvard to London. They should have already figured it out if there was something really bad with the food. And then the more I went into that, and then I changed my food to, to eating the organic food. And within a month, all my problems went away. I was like, hold on. If it's so simple, so how come people don't know about that? And then I read more, and then I find out about the corporate influence and how they control the regulatory bodies in the U.S., the politicians. And then it's just like a rat hole. And then you figure out that everything is linked, So we think there is a financial problem, there is the healthcare problem, food problem, the perpetual wars, the imperialism, the fake news media. So we are taught to look at them all those as separate organizations. So, but then. The more I learned, I found out that they're all linked together. It's just one establishment, So we have one establishment with just various branches. And then it's been a roller coaster. And now I'm just focused fully on geopolitics.
It's fascinating. Yesterday I had a conversation with a doctor from the UK who was banned. He can't work, practice as a doctor anymore. And he started his own podcast. And he's, what you just laid out, he's come to that same conclusion. I've come to that same conclusion. It's like all of us are slowly, exiting the matrix and realizing what's going on. And, I thought to start with American Empire. You mentioned empire. And I'm an American. And one of the reasons, when I grew up in the U.S., I just thought the U.S. was a nation, a state. I was a citizen of the nation state of the U.S. And over time, I learned, wait, no, I'm a citizen of the empire. It's an empire. It's the biggest empire in the history of the world. Almost 1,000 military bases around the planet. And I got very unhappy regarding what the things that the empire was doing in my name, right? False flag operations, running, starting wars just for the fun of it, killing millions of Iraqis. You know, back in the day, I used to have an Iraqi girlfriend, right, you know, out of Baghdad. And it's just like the insanity. And so, and it seems like the empire is crumbling. What are your, you know, big picture thoughts regarding the American empire, what it has done and what it is doing and you know, where it's heading?
Yeah. So the American empire, it basically is what took over from the European, the empires. You know, so the Europeans were so foolish that they destroyed themselves in World War One, and then the big the bankers and the globalists who run the world, they said, "Well, the World War One didn't quite work out as we wanted," so they were able to engineer World War Two, and then that put an end to all the European empires. And then the power was shifted to the American empire. And one of the, and there are so many tools for the American empire, right? You know, so you have the military, but you cannot just rule with the military. So you need a huge propaganda machine to convince the people that the U.S. is not an empire. Right. So that's why we have these 1,000 different websites and magazines and think tanks and academics, and their job is to churn out lies 24/7 all day long. So they've done a very good job at that. And then you need technology, because that is the ultimate way to prove its relevance to the world. You know, so. You know, so we are whining about the American empire, but we are forced to be on Zoom, which is from the U.S., right? So I have to go to Twitter to whine about the U.S. So that, and they know that, and they know that the technology is very, very crucial to maintaining the empire. So that's why they don't allow any other country to have a big social media. And you see that when the Chinese, they came up with TikTok, the U.S. immediately wanted to ban it, because the TikTok is challenging the American monopoly. So that's why the U.S. actually loved the internet. Because they thought that this is the best way to spread propaganda, to monitor people all over the world, to censor people all over the world. And they loved it. But now the last decade or so, they're losing control over the internet. So they're now spending billions of dollars on this censorship industry, to monitor people all over the world, to ban people, censor people, to demonetize people. And as you said, they banned you from PayPal and Patreon. So the technology part, the military part, the media, and then the soft power, right? That's also very, very important. So I was watching this the video on Gaza, where the Zionists and the U.S., it's basically one country, you know. So we talk about the U.S. and like Israel, it's actually just one country pretending to have two regions. So, you know, and there was a little girl, and she has no food and she has no water, and she's wearing a t-shirt with Mickey Mouse. You know, and I thought, my God, this is the freaking amazing power, the soft power of the U.S., you know. The bombs are made in America, and Israel is using those bombs with the protection of the U.S., which protects the U.S., which protects Israel through the U.N. Vetoes, the propaganda supports Israel. And then this small girl who has no food and water, she's wearing the Disney T-shirt. So that's also another huge. And then the medicine, the education. And you see how smart the empire is. So that's the first part. But all that said, that empire is actually coming to an end. Because that's what happens to all empires. Right? So the Americans don't know history. Right? So they think... the world history started in 1776, and Jesus was probably born in 1760s, you know. So that's the American version of the world. So they don't understand, you know, they've never been to Rome. They've never been to Istanbul. They've never been to Xi'an. They've never been to Athens to see how the glorious empires of the past, they all crumbled, you know. And so what is happening to the U.S. is a lot of problems are happening at the same time. So one is the finance. So they're just drowning in debt. You know, they're borrowing like $3 trillion a year to have this fake prosperity. And they stole a lot of money from Russian foreign exchange reserves. So but now the whole world is going towards a de-dollarization.
Right.
And that was, that's going to have...
That was one of my questions. Just, you know, the de-dollarization, the status of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve, and then, you know, what happens if they lose that? That could be complete chaos, especially within the U.S., no?
Yeah. So, okay. So first of all, you know, so it's not going to go to zero, right? So you look at the British Empire, they went down after World War II, but the pound is still pretty reasonably strong currency. So the dollar will slowly dwindle, you know? So if you look at the reserve currency status of the U.S. dollar, it was around 72% about 20 years ago. And now it's only 58%. So it's going to keep going down. And the real effects will probably be seen in like the next 5 years. So the value of the dollar will go down. I mean, the inflation will set in, and the U.S. government will not be able to distribute the treasury bonds and borrow at a very low, the interest rates, right? So now they can get away with 1-3%, and even that's making the interest payments like $1 trillion a year. So just imagine if the yields on the U.S. treasury bonds, they go up like 7, 8, 9, 10%. And then there will be a huge, you know, problem. The imports will cost a lot. There will be very high the inflation. Then the government will be forced to slash its spending. So then eventually it has to shut down the military bases all around the world. Right, so we're actually seeing some of that. They're getting kicked out of Syria and Iraq. So we will see this accelerate more and more. So there are going to be a lot of problems. And 10 years from now, it'll be a very, very weak empire. But that said, but it also makes them a very dangerous empire. Because they're not going to just
Yeah, that was a question I had. By the way, I am an American that has been to Rome. I have been to Xi'an. I have the terracotta soldiers behind me that I picked up in Xi'an many years ago. I have been to Istanbul, just in the airport, though. But before getting to the Thucydides trap, I believe, which you're alluding to, I did want to ask you about, you know, I've had on the podcast a number of times Dmitry Orlov, who's out in Russia, and he talks about, you know, we had this 1990s Soviet collapse in Russia, which was horrible. You know, many Russians died as a result. And he's talked about the inverse for America, that America would experience its own, you know, Soviet style collapse. And then I've also had on the podcast twice Johann Galtung, who recently passed away at the age of 93. And he's written about the contradictions that would lead to the decline and collapse of America. And, you know, there's this talk now of Second Civil War. You recently posted an interesting tweet about, you know, Trump in my home state of Illinois being removed from the ballot. We've seen in Pakistan, Imran Khan, who I think was an independent anti-globalist politician. So they removed Imran Khan in Pakistan, Bolsonaro in Brazil, and now Trump. Any thoughts, you know, about this talk of Second Civil War and what's happening with Trump and whatnot? And this sort of like police state in America, yeah. Do you see that?
Yeah, you know, because they're losing control. So they're just going mad. And so one thing I wanted to mention was, you know, so you mentioned the Thucydides trap. So the U.S. is going after China, and that's a part of the Thucydides trap. But the U.S. is actually also going after Russia and the Middle East, right? Because as Brzezinski, the famous the geopolitical mastermind in the U.S. in the 1990s, he said that the biggest danger to the U.S. will be the coalition of Russia, China, and Iran. So he called it the anti-hegemonic coalition. And he warned that that will be the biggest threat to the U.S. But these people in Washington, D.C. are so arrogant. They never saw the rise of China. They never saw the reemergence of Russia after the 1990s, which Wall Street and the globalists, they tried to totally destroy Russia, which was only saved by Putin. So they did not foresee that, and they did not see the Middle East becoming stable and the Iranian government being able to sustain 40 years of sanctions by the U.S. Right? And now there is this the multipolar world, which these people never thought about, right? So this whole the concept of different countries coming together and working together as partners, where there's no boss, and they just negotiate, they find a peaceful solution, and they focus on trade, building roads and railways and solar farms and 5G. And just being able to trade in peace, that concept just did not even cross the minds of the imperialists in Washington, D.C. and New York, right? So these people are so crazy that they could not even just imagine that Saudi Arabia and Iran would be able to make peace, right? So they could not imagine Russia and China having a good relationship. So many factors like that they missed out. And that's what they're now so scared. And then the thing that you mentioned about the Civil War, you know, the U.S. Deep State has been doing the color revolutions for like 70 years. you know. Right after the CIA was founded, was it in 1948 or 49 or 47? I forgot. So the first thing they did was to try a coup in Syria, because Syria was being a little bit pro-USSR. So the first thing they tried was to fund the opposition and to rent a riot. And that's all they've been doing for the last 75 years. So now that habit has now switched to within the U.S. So what they're trying to do to Trump, the Trump supporters, is all basically what the U.S., the CIA has done all over the world.
That just a thought came to mind. Maybe they are losing this ability to do this abroad, and so now they're relegated to doing it domestically. And as you mentioned, I think right after the CIA was formed, they ran regime change operations in Greece. I call it peanut butter success, Operation PB success in Guatemala, I think 1952, TP Ajax, 1953, Iran, right, Mossadegh, so on and so forth. And yeah, and when I was living in Kazakhstan, one of my students was participating. I may have told this story before, but I actually alerted the Kazakh authorities, where my student came to me after class talking about human rights and all this stuff, and she showed me a certificate in Cyrillic that she got from the National Endowment for Democracy. And this is rural Kazakhstan. And I'm like, wait, what, you know, what activities are you participating in? It's an extracurricular NGO. And I go to the web, like, give me the name of the NGO. I look up the website. It literally says, and they got offices all over Kazakhstan. And it said, literally said, I forget the name. I have a bookmark at the bottom, financed, sponsored by USAID, NED, Open Society. And I told my higher ups, and because Kazakhstan is still a security state, I got a visit from the head of the local, of the entire town's security. And he took me out to lunch, and I told him, look, and he probably thought, like, who am I? I got three passports. Am I some spy? And I'm like, look, I'm an American. I believe in freedom and democracy and liberty and sovereignty, which means I don't want my country to overthrow Kazakhstan. And look at the activities that they're doing, trying to brainwash your youth to rise up and overthrow you so they can put a puppet into place. And so going back to the clash between East and West, you mentioned there are many fronts opening up now, right? Ukraine, Gaza. I've had Francis Boyle on the podcast, and last, you know, we spoke about the Middle East, and he said it's the end game is Russia, China, and Iran. He calls this unlimited imperialism, that unless someone stops them, they're going to try and go for the gold and take over the planet. And the last, you know, the end game is Russia, China, Iran. Your thoughts on whether this could escalate? I mean, I feel like we can potentially escalate into a third world war. Any thoughts? I feel like the people in Washington, London, and Brussels are totally insane enough to do this.
Yeah, they're really pushing the limit. These people, they know absolutely, they don't have morality, they don't have ethics, they don't care about the legality. It's just power-hungry monsters. So they keep pushing the limits. You know, like there is a website that keeps track of the doomsday clock, and this is run by some scientists and geopolitical analysts. And it's now like 100 seconds, but close to midnight. You know, so we are in very, very dangerous situation, and the U.S. keeps escalating. Like, they're going to give Ukraine long-range missiles. And there was a New York Times article, after so many years, it now says, yeah, the CIA has been establishing spy bases along the Ukraine-Russia border since 2014, things like that, you know? And we don't know about all the bio labs that the Pentagon set up in Ukraine. And now they want to, you know, send the F-16 fighter jet. The individual, the European countries may send mercenary soldiers to Ukraine, right? Because NATO cannot do it by itself. So they're going to do it on a bilateral basis. So they're really pushing the limits. And the same thing like in the Middle East. Look at the U.S. So both the U.S. and Israel are now bombing Gaza, Yemen, Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq. So five countries are being bombed at the same time. Just mad psychopaths. And then, you know, they would, well, ideally, they would want to bomb Iran. But Iran has so many long-range missiles. They don't have the nukes, but they have enough missiles to destroy Tel Aviv. So that's the only thing that's stopping the imperialists from doing anything.
You mentioned previously COVID. I just want to get your thoughts on that, because with all that happened since the 2020s, I felt like there was this ushering in of a lot of technocratic totalitarianism. I've had guests on the podcast who have positive, like Jeff Nyquist. He said that it was a Russia-China bioweapon, or people like Ron Unz or Francis Boyle, who they would say that this was a Western bioweapon used to launch against the multipolar world to try to attack the economy of China. Whatever the case, our Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I believe that this was more, the signs are clear that this was some sort of Pentagon CIA operation. What is sort of your thought briefly on COVID?
Yeah, that's my thought as well. Okay. So, I mean, in the big picture, you know, the COVID was also a psyop to see how much they can control people. It was such a stupid disease, and there was like absolutely no need for a vaccine. You know, so you look at the African country. There are like so many African countries where the population that got vaccinated is like 3 or 4%. Okay. And they're all just happy. They don't know what the COVID is, what the vaccines are. And everything was so stupid. The disease was, a big scam in terms of making it scarier than it is. And sorry. And then, the mRNA vaccine, it's basically gene therapy. It's basically meddling with the genes, very dangerous. And so I shared a lot of statistics, where it shows. And, these are all from the UK, Australia, Canada, the official, the government statistics, okay? So it's not from, some the conspiracy theory. And then there were also so many studies in the U.S., okay, that showed the more vaccines you got, the more boosters you got, the more likely you were to get COVID. Okay, and you were more likely to die, So you see the charts of people who died with one shot, with two shots, and with two shots and a booster, and each time you got a vaccine, the probability of your death goes up. Okay, and it's not in the chart, but the people's mind, they cannot register, facts. It's like, it's sort of like religion or some kind of a strange ideology. People are so scared. As I was in China, in 2019 in December when the COVID broke out. And I was surrounded by people coughing all the time, you know, in Shanghai, Beijing, everybody seemed to be sick. So they all thought it was just, flu, like a really bad flu. And I also thought it was just a bad flu. And so will I have my own techniques for the immunity? Yes, I do like 10 different things to boost my immunity. So even though I was in China, I never got sick. You know, I didn't even get like a cold or cough, a fever, nothing. So so it was a huge psyop. And then the tests, the PCR tests were like the most the ridiculous thing, right? So they could turn up the sensitivity of the PCR testing. And so you can pretty much take whoever the person is, and you can say that they have the COVID virus, right? And this is the first time in the history of mankind, people were told that they have a disease even though there are no symptoms. I mean, would you go, would we go every week to test whether we have polio or smallpox? No, it would be ridiculous, right? I mean, you call the doctor and you say, doctor, just to make sure, I want to get a test for smallpox. He's like, what's wrong with you? You know? But for COVID, people were freaking lining up, thousands of people every day to get tested, even though they have no symptoms. It's like mass psychosis.
It's, yeah, total insanity. Never took an injection. And so, what would you say is the greater take? What were they trying to do? I interviewed Canadian scientist Denis Rancourt, who said that these were war measures. The lockdowns, almost like rationing. He posited that maybe this was like a simulation preparation for World War III with China and Russia. And I think, again, I don't know what's going on, but I have all these people from around the world, and we put together these pieces that makes some sense. And my biggest fear was the digital passport. Even here in Mexico, there were places you couldn't buy food. Like, it's like the Book of Revelation. You can't buy or sell. If you don't have the vaccine passport, the Nazi health pass, right? The Nazis did this. They had a health pass. I actually bought the Aachen pass. I have one from 1939, the Nazi Aachen pass, which proves proves your biological purity. You have to show your family tree that you are Aryan, your race, and that's like your passport. And I'm like, that's like the COVID thing, And before going to other topics, any final thoughts on COVID? And then every country participated, to different degrees. You had Belarus, Lukashenko, who said, look, the IMF and World Bank came to me and they said, they'll give me all this money if I lock down. And I'm like, no, we're not doing that. And then they tried to do a regime change in Belarus, and which they failed. Any final thoughts on the pandemic?
Yeah, I think that it was an attempt to ruin. I mean, there were so many aspects to it. Like you said, it was a simulation, a trial on how to control the world. That's one. And then the second thing was, I believe that it was an effort by the U.S. To destroy China's economy. So there were a whole bunch of the American, the military soldiers. They went to Wuhan in September 2019. They had the military games, the Wuhan military games, and soldiers from all over the world, they went to Wuhan. So that's a suspicious fact. And then if you look at the news from Maryland in June, July 2019, there was a leak from Fort Detrick. So Fort Detrick is the bioweapons lab in the U.S. in Maryland. And a lot of people, they got sick with this strange, the breathing problems and stuff in June, July, August. So you can see the news, and the people were so perplexed because they said, we have never seen such the infectious disease, a flu-like disease in June, summertime. So there are a lot of strange things for sure. And then I also think that it was definitely a way to test the genetic programming. Because there is a guy from Bayer, you know, one of the vice presidents, he gave a speech and he was saying, you know, thank God for COVID, we were able to get approval for the mRNA gene therapy, because nobody in the world would accept a medicine that changes your the genetic, but the COVID with the fear factor was able to do that.
Yeah, and you know, that's one reason I never wanted to take the PCR test, because I believe part of this has to do with, like, and that's sort of my subsequent question, is has to do with technocracy, scientific dictatorship, the social credit stuff where they need your DNA. You know, there's a biosecurity state where they want cashless society, digital currencies, digital passports to control your work, your employment, your movements, your freedom of transports, and social credit. They need your DNA on record. But you know, before getting to that, you mentioned globalism. Get your thoughts on the specter of globalism. You know, one world government, Davos, right? World Economic Forum. You've got the Bilderberg groups from 1954. Their meeting minutes from the 1950s to the 2000s are online. People can read the actual meeting minutes. It's not conspiracy theory. And so, you know, what are your thoughts on globalism? Are there different variations? You know, is it just the Western idea? Where does Russia, China, multipolarity fit in? Your thoughts on that, Davos and whatnot.
Yeah, you know, so there is a difference between globalization and globalism, you know. So globalization is just a lot of countries trading with one another, sharing ideas, with tourism, you know, the immigration to a very limited extent. And just the world getting along with one another, right? And finding the comparative advantages, just focused on the economic development. But each country respects the sovereignty of other countries, the social values, the norms of other countries, you know? So that's globalization. And even that's not fully perfect, because if you do the excessive offshoring, or if you do way too much free trade, you can destroy your own economy, right? So it has to be moderated, you know? So that globalization, for the most part, it's good. I would say 75% good with 25% some problems. But globalism, it's like the satanic, psychopathic manipulation of mind, soul, and body, right? So, like, they're the ones who want to destroy your tradition. They have these visions of transhumanism, right? And that's what they are testing. And so how much they can manipulate the human body to create, you know, like maybe a future of just one humanoid-like person, you know, looks like a robot. There's no sex, and we're all like walking around, and we have the credit scores and brain chips. From Elon Musk, right? So they're like they are picturing a total dystopian future for the world. And that's the scary part. And the power of them to fool the masses, is just quite unbelievable, you know. So they're able to lie, they're able to fool the masses, because like most people, they just go with the authorities, right? So you see 10 doctors on CNN, they say, so you have to take the vaccine. They're 99.9% sure. And if you don't take the vaccine, you kill your neighbors. And people go, same thing with, the climate change. It's like the most ridiculous psyops. And there's no science. It's just like a cult, climate cult. And people fall for that, right? I have so many smart people, some of them who work in the Silicon Valley, they have like $200,000 a year salary, and they buy into every nonsense of the climate change, right? So, that is globalism, and we all need to fight that.
Just real quick, you think they could achieve, this one world government, or that you don't think that they'll be able to do it?
I hope not. So that's why I support Russia and China and other Palestinians. So you need those the resistance forces to stop this lunacy.
Then my other question becomes, because I think you mentioned social credit. That's my that's one of my biggest fears. I had on my a guest in 2020, the Jewish historian Edwin Black, and I like his term better. He calls it the algorithm ghetto social credit system. And when I talk about this, I use China. It's out in alt media, mainstream media, they talk about the Chinese social credit system. And I use it as a point of reference. I'm not saying it's not China driving it. I feel like maybe in some respects they are more advanced, but the same thing is happening everywhere. It's in the West in a different format, right? And this idea of social credit, right? Where everything's cashless and they can just turn you off and then you can't do anything. You got to scan QR codes with your phone. You don't have a phone, you can't pay. You can't do anything. They shut you off. We saw in Canada, they froze people's bank accounts. That happened in Brazil as well. And you said, you worked in IT. What are your thoughts when it comes to this sort of social credit system overall in general, and maybe like the Chinese perspective on that, the Western perspective, any thoughts on this type of system?
So by the way, I have spoken to a lot of people, foreigners who live in China, lived in China in the past, and they all say there's no such thing as social credit score in China. Okay. And the first thing for me, I've never seen a formal document, a formal website, a formal something about the social credit score in China. So this is like one of those lies that when repeated a million times, it becomes the truth, So there's no like an app, So the Chinese people don't have an app that shows the social credit score, So like if the government is doing it secretly in the back, that's a possibility, So, I don't know what the world will look like 20, 30 years from now, because I don't know how far the artificial intelligence and robots are going to affect us all. Because if the AI and the robots, they become really capable, like we've seen in the movies, then 20, 30 years from now, the world will be very different, right? I mean, so nobody needs a driver, you know? I mean, all the cars will be driving by themselves, and all the gadgets will have the artificial intelligence, and the government will be monitoring everything we say, we do, and they will have this, you know, I mean, as of right now, they already have what is known as, I mean, the toxicity score. So you go online, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you write something, then with each word gets a score, you know, plus or minus. So they are like already doing, you know, and the Zoom call we do, I mean, it's very possible, but that but there is like an AI program right now that is actually translating our conversation in real life. And then the CIA and the NSA, they have a database, you know, with what you and I are saying, what words we use the most, and they're trying to map us all.
That's fine. I mean, that's fine, because this Zoom call is public anyways. So, but yeah, I get what you're saying. And that's part of my point earlier. Like, this is not, you know, if I mentioned China, and it's almost like projection. The West always does this. They're like, China's doing this social credit score. And it's really like what they want to do. And they're creating this boogeyman and projecting, like, China's doing the dystopian social credit. We got to do it. You know, and then they do the same thing, like the China did the COVID thing. No, it was actually us, you know. It's just any thought on this idea of projection?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that is like a very smart strategy, you know, like, say, for example, like, you know, if there's a person A and he wants to beat up person B. The best thing that the person A can do is, hello, everybody, B is trying to hit me. B is trying to stab me. You know, then you stab B, and then the people will say, yeah, that makes sense, you know, because he tried to stab you first, right? And you're just protecting yourself. I totally understand. So that's what they do. And they just lie, so many lies that now the Americans themselves, they don't know. What is the truth, right? So nobody knows what is the truth because the entire society has become a society of lies, right? People say, oh, yeah, but America has freedom of speech. No, you don't have freedom of speech if you have a good job and if you want a salary.
You have freedom of speech, but not freedom of reach.
Exactly. Yeah. What is that supposed to mean? You know, they send you to a forest and then they let you scream at the, you know. Okay, like, so for example, like, you cannot even say who runs America. Okay, it's like so basic. Okay, it's like such a taboo topic. Who runs America? You cannot talk about it. Okay, how can you fix the problem? Right? And then you have all these the pedophiles and Jeffrey Epstein and Joe Biden is sniffing little girls, and we all have to pretend that it doesn't happen. You know,
it's complete insanity. I did want to ask you, jumping to another region, Europe, NATO. I recently had on my former professor Alfred de Zayas, former UN independent expert, senior lawyer at the UN. He's just, as he gets older, he gets more less restrained, and he's like, he recently said NATO is a criminal organization, which I've always believed. You had Operation Gladio, right, during the Cold War. NATO running state terrorism, they're carrying out state terrorism, assassinations of European political leaders, Aldo Moro, blowing up school buses of children, etc. So, and he came out, he said EU is a scam. And he says we're living in an Orwellian totalitarian dystopia in the Western world. I'm an EU citizen. I hope the European Union peacefully disintegrates. It's a totalitarian structure. And then I feel like the middle class is eroding in the Western world in general, but it seems like right now the fastest in Europe. And these are consequences of the Ukraine war. It's Germany and other countries are deindustrializing. What are your thoughts on Europe and NATO?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really shocking to me how the Europeans are not able to figure out what is happening to them. Okay, they mastered that imperialism and the colonialism, right? And they did all the divide and rule. You know, the British, they used divide and rule all over the world. So how come Europeans cannot see what the U.S. is doing to them? I mean, okay, so I love Europe. You know, it's such a beautiful, beautiful culture. The people are so much nicer and smarter than Americans. But why are they being so stupid? You know, there's a guy, George Friedman. You know, he's the founder of Stratfor, which is like the think tank for the CIA. So he gives a speech, you know, he gave a speech in like 2014. And he goes, yeah, the primordial, the interest of the U.S. is to make sure that Germany and Russia don't come together. Because Germany has the technology and the capital. Russia has the natural resources and the manufacturing capability. And if they come together, it will be bad for the U.S. hegemony. Right, it's all like very basic geopolitics. You know how the U.S. Far away in the Atlantic Ocean. And the only way that the U.S. can make itself relevant in Europe is to create threats, and that is the only reason or the rationale for NATO, and they have to disrupt the European relations between Russia and China. So they have to stop the Eurasia, you know. So if you look at the Eurasia, the supercontinent, so it has like 75% of the world's GDP. And they could be very, very successful, right? So just imagine if China, Russia, Europe, Middle East, they all work together peacefully, and they all just to focus on trade, development. People all could be rich, right? Like there will be no poverty, and but everybody will have a home, everybody will have the health care, we will have peace, and there will be a man, woman, wife, husband, children, boy, girl, you know, going to church on Sundays or the mosques on Fridays. We all can live together happily, you know. But these psychopaths, they're like always like putting us on the edge, right? So they make the people so nervous and so stressed out with their constant problem creation, you know. So it's like the problem reaction solution, right? The famous thing by David Icke, he talks about that a lot. And that's exactly what is happening.
You mentioned Asia, and you've been writing about this. You recently wrote about India in Sputnik. And to get your thoughts just on that region of the world, do you see the future bright for Asia? You know, at the same time, we have this Asian NATO. So it seems like the U.S. is trying to build up South Korea, Philippines, Japan. They're saying we should give South Korea nukes. You've got military agreements being formed with Philippines and Japan. So it's like, and the, you know, NATO wants to become the world police. And so they want to put together an Asian NATO to keep China in check. Your thoughts on that, but also, you know, the Taiwan issue. I was at a conference last year where General Robert Spalding was speaking, and he was stationed in China. He was working for the Pentagon, and he himself said, we can't do anything about Taiwan. Like, America can't protect it. We can't fight. The only thing we can do is help them evacuate. So he was literally saying, like, we lost that. And then also the tech stuff, you know, the economic future of India and China. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so it would be suicidal if the Asian countries, they start a war with China on behalf of the U.S. I mean, how stupid can people be? It's just like really mind-boggling, you know? So it's like, think of the Vietnam War. You know, why would the North Vietnamese, they kill the South Vietnamese? Why would the North Koreans, they kill the South Koreans? Why? Because of a foreigner, he comes and tells you? People, just, my God, the stupidity of the human beings can never, never be underestimated, you know? So I, you know, I hope they wake up. And this is the one reason I hope that Ukraine, Russia wins, like wins big, and Russia takes up like half of Ukraine. That would be amazing, only because it would be a huge warning to the Asian countries, and they would see how powerless and a paper tiger NATO is. And then they would say, man, okay, we will figure out a peace agreement with China. You know, so China is smart. They've been around for 5,000 years. They've seen all these dramas, and they don't want wars. They don't want to colonize Vietnam. They're not going to go and occupy Philippines. Why? Okay, the Chinese have a good model. The Chinese, the model is based on peace, right? Because they need to get the raw materials from Africa. They need to get raw materials from Russia. And then they need to send all these finished manufacturing goods all over the world. And for a person who does, you know, business, they want peace, right? So they want a peaceful airport. They want peaceful railways. They want peaceful ships. So they don't gain by wars like the U.S. does, right? And China doesn't want to, you know, spread its the ideology, right? They're not trying to force the world to read Xi Jinping's books. They're not trying to force the world to learn the Chinese dancing, Chinese family values, Chinese food. You know, they're not trying to change the world. They're just trying to do business and be successful. They still have like another, you know, 500 million people that they want to bring to the middle class. So they have plans for the next 40, 50 years for themselves. And so that, you know, as I'm just hoping, you know, because in my country, there are a lot of crazy people who are so brainwashed to hate China, you know. And the government is actually banning the Indians on social media if they are too pro-China. It's just madness.
So if there is no World War III, you know, where do you see us headed? Is the economic center of power then shifting to Asia?
So it'll be yes. You know, so that, you know, so if you look at Asia as a whole, which means all the way from Japan to Saudi Arabia, you know, that's a big Asia. That will be the powerhouse. That will be the center of GDP, center of trade, center of manufacturing. And in the future, it will also be the center of technological innovation. But the U.S. will be reasonably strong, well, unless they collapse in a civil war. And so Europe will be good, and I hope it will be good. But I don't know about, the immigration, you know, because I think, you know, maybe 20 years from now, you know, like what happens if, say, 40-50% of the European population is actually they Muslims, you know. So will they be able to get along with the Christians, or will there be a civil war between Muslims and the Christians in Europe? I don't know, you know. But a lot of these things we cannot freely talk about because everybody is so sensitive, you know, political correctness. But you have to, you know, like somebody has to be like a scientist and they have to say, hey, guys, so this will be the demographic situation of Europe by 2050. Okay, so this many Muslims, this many Christians, this many the atheists, and there will probably be 30% of the population will be transgender. We don't know, you know. So we have to figure out all these things, and we have to look at it very, very objectively and smartly. But there is just way too much political correctness and stupidity, because, you know, to do these the analysis, you need some really people with the data and PhD. So you need to bring some sociologists, economists, mathematicians, statisticians, and they all should work together. But all these people, they have the good jobs, right? So they will never come to do such really practical analysis.
Yeah, and I don't want to ask you about India. Over the years, I've had a couple of geopolitical guests, experts from India, and I don't talk about it enough. I think I just read your foreign minister said that India will eventually become a member of the UN Security Council. And I feel like India is walking the line between East and West, Washington and multipolarity. You know, Kazakhstan has the multi-vector policy, trying to work with everyone to get its best interest, which I guess makes the most sense. Where do you see, you know, India with Modi, India's position in the world? I think I've read about, you know, they want to transfer some manufacturing from China to India. You know, there's been all this hype that India is going to be the new real area for growth. The thoughts there?
So, you know, the politicians, they like to exaggerate. So but India's future is not like guaranteed to be all rosy, you know, because we still have 900 million people who live in the rural areas. And the infrastructure is still bad. You know, basic things like water, the electricity, will have a lot of challenges. And the so-called the demographic dividend is, you know, so it's not so easy, you know. So you need to create a lot of jobs. And if you look at the pollution, you know, so it's already very bad. If you look at the top 100 cities in the world, 65 of them are from India. Okay. And that's when our manufacturing is only like about 2% of the global manufacturing. So just imagine if we want to become a manufacturing powerhouse like China. So you need a lot of thinking, you need a lot of planning. And things always happen very slowly in India, right? So they always promise big and then they underdeliver. So you just have to go back and look at what the Indian politicians they said, say, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And it's like always, you know, they reach like with 10% of the goal, you know, and then they go, wow, we did an amazing job. So theoretically, it's possible. But, you know, so if you look at the truly successful countries that went from developing nations to developed or made a huge achievement would be South Korea, Japan, and China. You know, And those three countries have a lot of discipline. Right? In South Korea and China, I mean, in Japan, so you don't need laws, you know, just the social norms that they make people so dedicated and working hard, you know. But like you go to Japan, they don't have a law about the street being clean. But the social norms, it's like impeccable streets, you know. It's like, oh my God, how did this happen? There's no trash, there's no paper, there's no cans, everything is so clean. And in China, they've also become very clean, but they also had to, you know, China is also more like they have to pass some laws to be strict, and they had to have the internet firewall, you know. So the government had to do a lot of things to ensure success, right? So something like that has to happen. So we need, you know, like in India, like either there needs to be like an awakening at the grassroots level, but or the government, they have to become very proactive and push things forward.
Well, in general, I think what you mentioned about governments, they always under deliver. And what you just, you know, mentioned, this gives me some hope that it would be difficult to implement in all countries the algorithm ghetto, right? This idea of this digital passport social credit system. SL, we've covered the waterfront. It's great to get your perspective from another part of the world. Is there any final, you know, final thought for us that you might have?
I know that was great, and maybe we can do it some other time on a very specific narrow topic.
Yeah, and your links are in the description. I think pretty much where the main place people can go to follow you on Twitter, X, your Substack, anywhere else.
Yeah, so Twitter, Substack, and then I do podcasts. You can find me on like Spotify and stuff. Yeah, just, you know, start with Twitter, and it will lead you.
Is your podcast on your Substack?
I think so, and if not, I'll go and I'll add the link.
Yeah, I'll put the links in the description. So great chat for the first time, and hopefully you join me again in the future. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you. That sounds awesome. Bye, folks.
I hope you enjoyed this Geopolitics and Empire podcast. The website is geopoliticsandempire.com, and I encourage you to sign up for the free email list that goes out with each podcast and every weekend with a collection of news headlines. The newsletter and website are our last lines of defense. We're being censored and deplatformed. It's nearly impossible to find Geopolitics and Empire on the Google search engine. We've been blacklisted. YouTube frequently takes down our videos with strikes. Facebook restricts our page. Reddit and Twitter take down posts. And after the Associated Press mentioned Geopolitics and Empire in a 2021 article co-written with NATO, our Patreon account was terminated. Vimeo also terminated our Pro account. The best free way to help Geopolitics and Empire is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or elsewhere and subscribe to all of our media channels. You can find the video broadcast now on 5 platforms: Odyssey, Rockfin, Rumble, BitChute, and Brighteon. You can find the audio broadcast on the podcast ecosystem: SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, and so on. My current favorite social media channels are Twitter and Telegram, but you can also find us on Gab, MeWe, Minds, Float, VK, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Finally, Geopolitics and Empire is in dire need of funding to continue. You can leave a donation, purchase a consultation with the host, or become a member to receive additional benefits. We also produce a weekly broadcast called Dissident Thinker for members and Rockfin subscribers only. We will continue to fight the good fight, come hell or high water. Thank you for listening.